Before we get into the episode, we want to let you know we are gathering another Attaching to God learning cohort. In it, you will escape your anxious jungles and avoiding deserts of faith and grow into secure attachment with God and with others. This is a one-of-a-kind six-week cohort combining recorded teachings and live cohort calls. So you can get all the details at embodiedfaith.life/learning-cohorts. Or see the show notes for details after the description.
Welcome to season six of what is now called the Attaching to God podcast. We're going to be doing some more episodes of just Sid and I talking to each other about different topics. We'll still be interviewing people, and we're going to be, hopefully, we're going to be having a regular guest that will show up maybe monthly if we can somehow.
Mystery guest
who maybe if we can get him to commit once a month.
Oh, you just gave it away. It's a man.
It is a man. It is a man. And we're also going to be doing some concluding like regular bits at the end, which is called baggage claim, which you'll find out about that at the very end. But as per our regular introductions, we are Jeff and Sid Holzclaw. This is the Attaching to God podcast, where we are seeking to integrate neuroscience, spirituality, and faith. And as always, it is brought to you by Grassroots Christianity, which is seeking to grow faith for everyday people. All right, so here on the first episode of the new season, we could call this Jeff's second half life crisis.
Okay, but before we even
We're doing a name change. Okay, yes.
Before we even get into anything else, I just want to tell anybody who's listening that this was a really funny moment right before because
Sid saved the day.
Yeah, so so it's kind of funny because we have this pattern between the two of us that whenever I'm going to do something, including technology, I kind of go intuitively. I don't always pay attention to all the details. And so Jeff actually created a checklist for me once of all the things I needed to make sure I double checked before we started recording. And you know what happened today? We sit down and I just ask casually beforehand, did you make sure that the microphones are the sound input and not just the laptop? And sure enough,
she saved the day. All the mic inputs were wrong and it would have sounded horrible. We would have talked for a half an hour or something like that. And it would have just been like, wah, 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 Charlie Brown.
So all that to say, He's trained me so well that I follow the checklist.
Saved the day. And this new season also, if you're watching online on YouTube, I've decided to let my hair down, in the midst of this season, which means I'm wearing a hat. Cause as you know, I'm bald, been shaving my head bald for almost 2 years or 3 years.
How many hats do you have?
That's a different question. So I have quite a few hats, and I wear hats all the time, but on video or in classes, I'm not wearing a hat, but I decided, you know what? It's going to be me. So, let's go through a brief history of this podcast. So when it got launched, you and I had a podcast a long time ago when our first
Years ago.
I got balloons. The Zoom balloons just went off again. Whenever I do the peace sign, I think. Anyhow, sorry about that if you're watching online. So several years ago when our book came out, Does God Really Like Me? We did a podcast called God With Us, the God With Us podcast, right. Which we did
that down in the basement with horrible lighting and an awful backdrop.
And so that was our first kind of podcast. And then about a year later, I launched a podcast just by myself where I was interviewing people. It was an excuse to get to know new and interesting people. And then it was kind of like all about my, you know, interest in neuroscience.
Was that one called Embodied Faith right away?
Or no. So that one was called Being With. Right. It was kind of a playoff of the God With Us podcast where we need to learn to be with God. How do we be with others, and how do we even learn to be with ourselves? And it was still kind of bringing in the neuroscience and spiritual formation. But then after a full year, I was also on the side, and this is where Grassroots Christianity, like that name comes from. I was also doing these like theology courses, these online learning cohorts, where it was talking about five shifts of shifting out of like fundamentalism without losing your faith. And one of the shifts was to shift from a disembodied mind into an embodied faith. And I was working on the material and I was teaching through it a couple of times. And all of a sudden I was like, that's a much better name that encapsulates what this podcast is all about.
I think I remember embodied. Coming in. Really
yeah, I probably stormed in.
Yeah. Like, what if we called the podcast Embodied Faith?
And you're like, that makes sense to me. So we did that. And so it's been called that ever since. We have some writings at another site that we share together for our cohorts. That's called Embodied Faith. And so that had, we've been doing that for several years. And the last year we brought you on because we were stepping out in faith from our full-time ministry at a vineyard to now a much reduced part-time work there, but then also doing a bunch of other stuff together, you and I, as well as your coaching business. And so we brought you on, which is, I think all the listeners agree that that was a stroke of genius by me. So they've loved having you. So thank you for being on for a full year. This is like an anniversary, I guess, for you.
I guess it is.
Anything you want to say on your 1 year anniversary of being on the podcast? Anything come to mind?
I'm really excited about the future direction of the podcast. It was fun last year and I'm even more excited about this year. So I think it's going to be a good season.
All right. So that brings us to this moment right now.
Yeah.
Which is, why are we renaming the podcast, the Attaching to God podcast? Now you know the result, but you actually don't know the pathway, you as in Sid, but also all of you listeners. So we're going to talk about that to kind of give
a
little.
So I get to be surprised right along with the listeners too.
Or confused. It could be either because I don't know how.
Just so everybody knows, I have no show notes for this. Jeff did not prep me for anything that we're talking about today. So I'm hearing it all.
That's right. All right. So I was talking with my spiritual director and a coach, even though you're a spiritual director and a coach, but since you're my wife and partner in work, I was figured that probably won't be good to get all that stuff, mangled together or mixed up.
Yeah, it just doesn't always work so well when you try to coach or use spiritual direction with the spouse. Yeah, it's good to have somebody outside the marriage.
Yes. So we are heading toward empty nest. Our kids are launching out of the world. It's really great. Our oldest son is getting married in a month, yeah, 2 months.
A little more.
He's also buying a house, blah, blah, blah. So these are all really great things, but it kind of got me into this place of like, well, what is God calling me into my next project or the continuing project? And maybe there's nothing. It's just like, but maybe there is something there. And I had the sense that either I could continue focusing on the narrow, not in a bad way narrow, but like the narrow focus of embodied faith and the practical side of like spiritual formation and neuroscience, which I love to do. But this is kind of the more recent work in the trajectory of my life. The broader work, which is a little older, which kind of goes under the umbrella of what is called grassroots Christianity, but also my teaching at Northern and Western and other places, is kind of the larger kind of just like, I'm a systematic theologian who teaches theology and discipleship and church and missions. And so they're kind of like the broader side of theology. And so I was trying to discern, like, do I pour myself exclusively into kind of like the neuroscience, spiritual formation, or is that just, you know, or do I keep doing kind of the broader kind of systematic theology stuff or something like that? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense to me.
So right. I had a sense in which, like, I was trying to discern, like, well, which one is it? Is it all this or is it all the other one? So I was trying to discern that. With the spiritual director or coach, they're kind of both the same thing. In this instance,
they're not always the same thing, but in this instance, right. You had someone who is both a spiritual director and a coach blending both together
right.
with you.
So he helped me see kind of a broader trajectory in which the most recent kind of neuroscience and spiritual formation stuff wasn't actually a big departure. So that's the story we want to tell. So it's nodding yes.
Yeah, I'm nodding yes. And I just want to sort of add a little aside in that, you know, the reason that the empty nesting sort of spurred on this question of what is my next project is because I think you were really intentional about really being present and available as we were raising these young men to launch into the world. And so there were some things that you put on the back burner or put off to the side because you didn't want to be completely consumed by a project. And so I think in that sending off of like, we're launching our young men, there became this new openness to, oh, now I can be a little bit more invested in what my life's work is all about. So I just wanted to sort of like add that
for sure.
It felt like a new sort of launch point for you in a way too.
That is exactly right. All right. So the first thing would be, the Wayback Machine for Jeff Holzclaw. I was raised fundamentalist Christian in California, the Bay Area, Central California, San Jose.
You know what? Would it be helpful really quickly to just sort of say, like, for some listeners who might not know what you mean when you say fundamentalist, do you have a really quick sort of summary definition of what you mean when you say I was raised fundamentalist?
Well, so this episode is going to be kind of jargony for some if you don't know all the church stuff, which is kind of inescapable. But fundamentalist for me would be a very high view of scripture, inerrancy, take scripture seriously. World missions was definitely a passion, as well as individual evangelism. It was also married to conservative politics. Very what is called dispensational or end of the world or rapture oriented, and kind of like the left behind kind of sense. Let's see, what else would fundamentalism, very kind of militant in faith, and the way they hold their beliefs, very individualistic, as far as understanding salvation, non-sacramental, very personal, like me and Jesus kind of stuff.
Okay. Thanks. I think that's helpful.
So I was raised that way. And it wasn't until I was probably like 17 where I learned that I had a brain, which was kind of a revelation.
What?
Yeah. It was like, oh, I like using my brain. I like thinking about things. And it was at that time that I discovered C.S. Lewis and Francis Schaeffer and their kind of apologetic arguments for the faith and the God who is not silent, and kind of the cosmological, like all the arguments for God's existence. As well as C.S. Lewis's kind of understanding of beauty and, you know, his arguments for morality. So that was like my first kind of understanding where faith could be like intellectually defended rather than just like asserted kind of militantly, like the fundamentalisms that I was raised with. And then I went off to public university, public school, or a secular school, as us, you know, fundamentalists would want to make clear. I didn't go to a Christian school. I went to a secular school.
Was that a conscious decision or was that a financial decision?
It was a little bit of both, I think. I had an early call to go into ministry, and I felt like I didn't want to be sheltered in like my faith. That prompted me to study philosophy, which is like the first part of the story, where because I felt like that would be a good background for theology for when I went to seminary for grad school. You know, I had my whole life mapped out.
Which is why I thought you were much older than you were when I first met you, but that's a story for another time.
That's right. So the main point for this first part is I was studying postmodern philosophy in college when I was, you know, 17, 18, 19 to 20. And I was pulling that into this kind of apologetic framework of Francis Schaeffer and C.S. Lewis and other people in the sense that philosophy doesn't defeat faith or theology. But it can enrich it. It certainly does challenge it, but it doesn't defeat it. That there's ways to answer even really good and critical kind of understandings of philosophy. And so for me, like I took on especially like the postmodern critique of faith, which we can't get into all, like what is that critique? But I kind of use it as a way to both defend faith, but it also helped me like leave my fundamentalism. So I kind of used, it kind of gave me a path for recovering an ancient faith as faith seeking understanding, not a faith that's just like all certainty. We have all the answers, but is open to mystery, but doesn't just lead to, you know, a loss of faith or something like that. And so I'm usually, when it comes to philosophy, I'm usually a little too postmodern for my conservative friends. And I usually defend orthodoxy a little too much for my more progressive friends.
Which is why your Facebook feed is so exciting.
So interesting. Yes. So that was a kind of the high level. If we think of like philosophy as kind of like those grandiose ideas, I was starting kind of like at the top level with theology and philosophy. And then I went to seminary. And then, which is, you know, lots of stories there. But then I also started getting more into like political theory or politics or how is the church itself, its own like social political institution. And that was part of my coming out of fundamentalism is faith isn't just about individuals and their relationship to God. It's our relationship to one another. And that actually our life together is the best witness to faith, or rather is the best defense of the faith. Or we could say the church is the best apologetic, is what I kind of came to. So instead of the apologetics being this like realm of ideas, it's actually the lived life of the community that is the best apologetic. And I actually think that's why a lot of people are leaving the church right now. It's because that lived life of the church is not witnessing to the goodness of God, which is, you know, another kind of set of conversations.
And that was a pretty big shift for you from that sort of just me and Jesus all by myself life that you were raised with into this sense of like, no, actually there is no life outside of this embodied witness of the community of God.
Right. And then that spiritual formation, or what we call discipleship, isn't just a one-on-one thing. It's something that happens communally and socially. So we could think of a Sunday morning worship service as communal spiritual formation. And so that was something that, you know, I was getting brought into, is that, you know, the things we do with our bodies on a Sunday morning in community with other people shapes and forms our faith and our life together.
And we're
in
being
all sorts of ways.
Yeah, we're being shaped and formed on Sunday mornings, even if we're not being intentional about how we're being shaped and formed.
Right. And so even though the idea of like spiritual formation and kind of like that kind of discipline as we think of it now isn't something that was on the top of my mind, this idea of some sort of formative work happening in the church community was very much in mind. And so when I was getting my doctorate, I studied a lot of like political philosophy, especially there's this interesting trend about 15 years ago where atheist political theorists were kind of latching on to certain Christian views as like revolutionary kind of work.
Can I quickly insert how you got your doctorate? Is that like a, like, do we not have time for that?
No, that's a different story because it's not quick. So it's God's work.
Eventually.
Yeah, it's God's work that I got a doctorate. So that helped me. So that kind of turned. So the first one was like philosophy doesn't defeat faith. There was also this kind of idea that political theory doesn't defeat faith too. So you can't just dismiss the church by, you know, saying, oh, it's just one politics among many, or one kind of political institution among many. It can just be reducible to anthropology or social issues or something like that. And so I kind of started really getting a more robust, and this is another, you know, deep topic, but the Anabaptist tradition of formation, of pacifism, of the community kind of working together, and it's especially its understanding of power became like really central for me. But that was the idea that like political theory doesn't defeat faith either. It can enrich it and deepen it, but just engaging with politics doesn't just make faith peripheral or, you know, or superfluous, to use a fancy word.
Okay, I do feel like it's important to at least mention that in that in-between, between seminary and your doctorate, you worked at Starbucks for 3 years and you rode a bike through the snow to get there and back. And you spent a lot of time with your kids who were very small at that age. And I think that was a huge part of your formation as well, that it wasn't all happening in your head. It was also becoming a father. It was learning how to make yourself available to your stir crazy wife and your two little kids.
So you're saying I was being formed myself?
Yeah, you were being formed in that whole process. And I just want to throw that in, especially for the people who are like, oh, is he just going to talk about like heady stuff the entire time?
Well, I would if you didn't interrupt.
But I think this parallel process of like you had all these ideas and, you know, all these different things that you were reading that were shaping and forming you simultaneously as living a very ordinary life, serving customers coffee and dealing with, you know, people on a, like, you were living real life in the middle of all of this in the real world.
Yeah. So I'm not just like a professor that's in the ivory tower who reads and writes books or something like that.
Yeah. And I think that makes a big difference in how you see the world and how you speak.
Well, and part of everything you just said is what led into kind of this third shift then, which is into like neuroscience and psychology, because that was part of the path that was helping our marriage move forward. Mm-hmm. How do we understand the skills for turning on our relational circuits and staying connected rather than slipping into protection, and
helping you attune to our kids when they would get
attunement, implicit, explicit, you know. And this was your journey quite a bit too, but I was, you know, since we're together in this life, we're journeying that together. And because I am such a researcher and, you know, primary source person, after some of these trainings and things, I was like, I want to learn more about this. This is pretty interesting. So, you know, and that was, you know, 10 plus years ago, and early kind of research led into our first book. But then I kind of kept going deeper into attachment theory and neuroscience, as well as just psychological theories. And then, of course, there's like trauma, abuse, church trauma, church abuse. All that stuff is kind of like in the mix now. But there's also this trend, especially right now, where it's like the more psychology you learn or the more trauma informed you become, I see a lot of people who then is the less and less concerned or committed to faith you become, mm-hmm. and the more and more sometimes militant against faith. It's faith that has been abusive. It's the church that has been traumatizing. And I'm not saying that those realities aren't true for people.
Yeah, we can acknowledge that those things do happen.
Right. But it's not necessary that the more psychology you learn, some people feel like, the more psychology you learn, the more you can demystify this thing called faith and find out that, you know, it's not really, you know, it's just us and our own psychological needs creating religions as different coping mechanisms and defense mechanisms, and different needs are being fulfilled through religious communities. And on the one hand, like, well, that's kind of true, I guess, but that doesn't mean you can dismiss all the other realities of faith.
I mean, God knows how he made us. He knows what our desires and our relational needs are. And so I don't know, is it such a bad thing that living in a community of faith, when it's at its best, actually does meet some of our basic human psychological needs?
I don't think it does. I think that's absolutely right. So for me, this kind of like third wave was kind of like, well, psychology can enrich faith. It doesn't defeat faith and theology. And it can't explain faith and theology away. And so for me, like the path right now is something like, well, Jesus, life with Jesus is the true therapy, or it is that which saves us, which is, you know, and salvation is like a salve. It's the thing that heals us. Like that's actually the root of the word, right? Salvation. And so we're both, you know, very, and this podcast is very committed to the idea that, like, you know, God still saves and heals the wounds, that we have. And so when I was talking with my coach / spiritual director, and we were kind of just outlining these like large movements, and there was other kind of tragedies and difficulties in my life about, like, I had, like a back injury when I was in my late teens, and that kind of, you know, did certain
pretty
work.
Significant back injury.
Yeah, very significant back injuries. So that did like significant work in my own life as far as emotional regulation and becoming aware. It was part of me becoming embodied, even though my fundamentalist and family life didn't really teach me how to be an embodied person. This injury did. And so I was forced in this path.
You had to become aware of your body and what it needed and what you needed to do to take care of yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
Well before I had all these words and these shifts in the postmodern philosophy and the theology and the practice and the embodiment, all before all that stuff, I had kind of lived into it. So it was all those things that kind of left me to see that actually this apologetics thread, which is, you know, a defense of the faith, or a defense always sounds so defensive, but kind of like a giving of reasons for the faith that led through philosophy and politics to psychology was actually kind of together. It was like one trajectory of that. I have a heart to make the faith kind of understandable on all sorts of different levels. And that is something that's important to me. And so I saw, oh, this is like works on multiple ways. So,
well, just okay, to simplify. Ahead. Yeah. I think, you know, we've often talked about how you read the books that people are not normally going to read because you love them, because they excite you, because you are interested. Like, this is a man who in his leisure time is reading things that are not leisurely for most people. And so just to say that, like, the work that you do, I think, has always been really important. And it's that sense of, I'm going to read all these. I mean, look at the books we're surrounded. We're in Jeff's office. We're facing each other, but we're not actually next to each other. But as we face each other, there's all these books that we're surrounded by, and they're books that I'm not going to choose to read in my spare time, but the way that you can distill them and integrate them and then present something different, I think has encouraged so many people in their faith throughout the years and in the different various contexts that we've been in and the cohorts that we've done. And so I love that your coach was able to point out, actually, this thing is very consistent with what the kind of work that you have always done. The flavor of that work is to integrate and make understandable things that are really pretty complex to integrate.
Well, I like it. It's fun. So all that kind of adds up to, I started off with this initial like dichotomy, like, do I decide to just pursue embodied faith kind of more rigorously as like our partnership, you and I together, and kind of work on the spiritual formation stuff. But part of me was like, I like all that stuff, but there's that other side, the theology side, the more cultural engagement stuff I find really, you know, interesting and passionate as well as important. So after kind of looking at this kind of like big thread, large trajectory, I just felt like, what if I just continue to do both? And the theme of, which is the theme of our next book, but the idea of attaching to God, I kind of came around to of like, well, actually that is big enough to encompass all these mm-hmm. concerns. Like practically, on the spiritual formation neuroscience side, obviously the attachment theory, integrates those kind of disciplines. We've talked about that on this podcast, on my writings and things like
Not
that.
Not as much as we could. We're going to talk about it.
But then also on the systematic theology side, or just theology or scripture and how we read the Bible, there's a lot there, you know, because attaching to God is just another way of saying like God's love for us, and how is God's love displayed throughout the Bible? How is God's love displayed to us through the cross, atonement theory? How is God's love displayed through the church, ecclesiology? So it's all those classic kind of like topics in theology.
And
that could still be
the relational nature of salvation and life with God.
And so it's, in a sense, it's not just this podcast that is kind of getting a name change. It's kind of like Jeff's whole kind of like life work is going to be under this umbrella of attaching to God. So there we go. That's the whole scoop of it in 26 minutes.
And why should listeners care? Like, why does it matter to anybody that there's been this shift? How will it help them read your Facebook page?
Oh, I don't know. Because just knowing the inner machinations of Jeff Holzclaw is important.
Machinations?
Is it machinations? I don't know. I say words wrong. That's who I am.
A man who wears hats.
Okay. So yes. So that's why we're doing the name change. We will continue to be a podcast that's focused on a neuroscience-informed spiritual formation, especially focused on attachment theory, but all sorts of things. We'll still continue to have guests. So in that sense, things aren't going to change a lot, but we're going to do more episodes where it's just the two of us.
And Jeff won't talk the whole time about really heady stuff.
No.
We'll have different kinds of conversations.
For sure.
So if you're listening to this episode and going, oh my goodness, I didn't even understand half of what he was saying, don't worry. It's not always going to be like that. We're going to talk about his cold plunge adventures, maybe?
No. So, although we're about to talk about that. So, another part of the change is we decided to have some regular, and we'll take suggestions.
Oh, will we?
Well, I mean, we'll take suggestions. I don't know if we'll do it.
That are within reason.
So, but regular segments of things that are kind of like off the topic, but we always come to you. So Sid came up with this really good idea. Can you briefly explain the idea?
Yeah, well, it was just the idea that, like, you know, we all have, people like to talk about their baggage, right? The things that they end up carrying around and you bring with you even when you don't need it, right? It's just always there.
Especially in the relationships.
Baggage, right? And so I talked about this idea of, like, check your baggage, or like pick up, you know, like when you go on a trip, you have to check some baggage because it won't come with you onto the plane. And so that idea of, I mean, it goes under the, you know what I mean? But it's like, so I had that idea of like, check your baggage, like willingly release it, like sort of talk about it.
That's not what we're calling it though.
No, because you changed it to something even more clever, which was baggage claim.
I don't think I did. I think you did.
Oh, well, whatever.
So yes, baggage claim.
That's how ideas
we're going to have a regular segment called baggage claim, where one of the two of us, or sometimes both of us, depending on the topic, are going to claim our baggage in the relationship. As we saw it pop up either in the previous week or month, or, you know, maybe 10 minutes before we press.
And we will not share with each other ahead of time.
That's not true.
What? The, oh.
No. This, just this time.
Okay. Well,
just
you didn't tell me today. So.
So this time, so we're going to do, I'm going to do it this time. Baggage claim is going to be, I'm going to do two really short ones and then you can respond. You're going to laugh.
You're responding between.
And these are kind of, and these are kind of, you know, low hanging fruit. So then we can work up to the much more personal stuff. But the first one is, I'm going to claim the baggage of getting really passionate about random new things. Okay. So usually this is like books and research ideas, which are pretty innocuous and they're usually in line with all the stuff about this podcast, emotions, resilience. What the heck is this thing called psychoanalysis, or I'll deep dive on Carl Jung for like a couple of weeks or something like that. But more recently, I did the really passionate thing about mud water.
Yes, I did.
So, and I started off the mud. I started off with the do-it-yourself version. This is like the coffee substitute with mushrooms, and then like chai.
Ordering like a 2-pound bag of turmeric.
Yeah, so I got like bags of turmeric, cinnamon, mushroom powder, chai tea powder, and I don't know what else, right? And then I mixed it, and I had this formula, and I got it right for like a little bit, but then I made the big batch. And I guess I screwed it all up and it tasted awful, was no good. So then of course I got over the passionate thing that I was passionate about.
And we still have a lot of that homemade.
That was like a year ago.
It doesn't taste good.
But then someone else said, I think it was one of your clients or I don't know what, you brought it up about the everyday dose mushroom latte thing. And I was like, I just ordered it impulsively, of course. And now I've semi-faded on that, but now you're hooked on it. You're drinking it like every day.
It's true.
So then what's the other big, passionate thing that I'm passionate about?
The cold plunge.
The cold plunge. Yes.
You so I know talked relentlessly about the cold plunge for a long time. And then you went to Facebook Marketplace and you bought yourself an old freezer and you got like a thing that regulates the temperature. And then you had to reseal it and seal it. And you actually stuck through a lot of hardship on that one.
Yeah, so
you did
I
not
made,
give up quickly.
I made my do-it-yourself.
It wasn't like the bad batch plunge. Of mud water that no. you chose not to try to fix. Like you kept problem solving the cold plunge, and now it works, even though it won't shut.
So I used a pond liner to put inside the freezer to keep the water in from leaking. But then the freezer cold unit thing keeps it cold, although it doesn't need to because it's still super cold right here. So that's, I'm just owning, I'm grabbing, I'm claiming the baggage of being passionate about random new things. The other one is I'm going to claim, and you as my wife will know this already, but I'm a tough directee for spiritual directors. I'm a tough directee. I'm sure if any of you spiritual directors who are out there, you're like, oh, I have a couple of those. I hate talking about myself in general, which is a miracle that basically this entire episode was me talking about myself.
Yes, but it's about your intellectual.
That is true. I know.
It's a very safe way to talk about yourself.
It is. It's a cheat. So usually, you know, I'm a tough directee because I give short answers. They're very precise and to the point. I do a lot of internal processing, which means I don't verbal process much. So I'm sure my spiritual directors like feel like, I don't know what they feel like, but. So anyways, I'm going to own that too. I'm a tough directee.
Yeah, those are good baggages to own. And I think it's great that you have that awareness about both of those things. And I love that you can claim those.
All right. So that is the Jeff Holzclaw's second half of Life Crisis and why we changed the name of the podcast.
We did call it a second half of Life Crisis.
Just
now.
For this episode.
Just for this episode.
That's just, you know.
It's just, it's jargon.
Yeah, you know, that's clickbait. I didn't really have a crisis, but I was doing a discernment time.
You're doing a deep work.
That's right. So that is what it is.
Catharsis of sorts.
So moving forward, we're going to be, Sid and I are brainstorming topics. Please, wherever you see this, whether it's Facebook, on the podcast, where we write, or on YouTube or wherever, if you have ideas of things you would love to hear us talk about, please drop that in the comments wherever you find it. And we'll be getting back to episodes just about one a week moving forward.
Yeah. Good stuff.